Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, this is the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, back after a couple of week hiatus. Because, well, there wasn't a whole lot going on for us to talk about, but we're back now. I'm Robert Winfrey, and this is, as I mentioned, the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, and wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Can't quite say weekly in this case, because again, we were off for a few weeks, but we're not stopping now. Oh boy, not until the end of the year. And even that's a little bit uncertain, because the UFC's new owners have not released or discussed a single event for the year of 2017. Now, there's still, 60 days to get some of those January cards announced and stuff worked out, but and the only week we've got off from this point until the end of the year, at this moment at least, is the week of Christmas. Everything else, there's stuff going on. All right, tonight on the show, we're going to specifically be previewing UFC Fight Night 98. Doubles as the finale of The Ultimate Fighter Latin America Season 3. No one cares. But there's a couple of good fights, specifically the main event. The main event is Tony Ferguson and Rafael Dos Anjos. I shouldn't have to sell any of you on that or my excitement for it. So we'll be previewing that. Then there's plenty of stuff that happened since we've been on hiatus. Some cards got announced. UFC 207 looks good. UFC 206 looks like crap. Ronda Rousey's coming back. The UFC slashes its employees, corporate restructuring being kind of what it is, I assume, but there's all of that. So if any of that strikes your fancy, and George St. Pierre continues to have issues with the UFC, which will be interesting going forward. If any of that's on your mind, if you've got a question or a comment that you'd like to get addressed on the air, the show takes live callers at 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. If you want to call in using Skype at the moment, I don't think you can. So I'm sorry about that. Complain to Blog Talk. It is not on me. I would love to have all of you who can only use Skype. But Blog Talk and Skype get along like sodium and water. Bear in mind, that's not sodium chloride. That's actual sodium, which, those of you who don't know, explodes if you expose it to water. All right. With that somewhat protracted introduction out of the way, here with me for the first little bit at least. He's got other stuff to do this evening. I'm somewhat jealous. But back with me for at least the first 30 minutes or so is 411 Mania's jack of all trades, my resident partner in crime, Jeff Harris, is with us. How you doing this evening, Jeff? It's been a while.
Good evening, Robert Winfrey. Welcome back. It has been a while, and for tonight, I have a special announcement. I am declaring myself a free agent from the UFC. I'm now a free agent from the UFC. So there you go. Free agency from the UFC is Jeffrey Harris. Even though I was never technically under contract to the UFC, I am now a free agent from the UFC. Technically,
boy, they
better happen from the UFC.
They better pray that that doesn't go to court. The UFC just really doesn't want their contracts to be examined by any kind of appropriate legal mind to establish case law for them one way or the other. Yeah, and then GSP wants to fight for the middleweight belt in Toronto, and yeah, not that that card doesn't need help, because boy does it. All right, because I know Jeff is, you went to the NXT show tonight, right?
Okay, so I'll be leaving soon to head out to go to NXT in Los Angeles, and we'll be having some coverage, hopefully, on Thurman Romania Wrestling, so, but, yeah.
All right, well, because I know, and this gets has been brought up in the past, you and I are both firmly on the Tony Ferguson bandwagon. Since the rest of that card is, well, it just kind of is. I mean, it's a tough finale card, you know? What? Lower your expectations down to the basement. But Tony Ferguson and RDA is a really good fight. So I'm curious, you know, before we move on to some of the news pieces so that you can have your say on that, what do you think about Ferguson and RDA?
I love the fight. Man, I've been on the Tony Ferguson bandwagon for a long time. I'm going to ride it out. I'm sticking with Tony Ferguson, man. He's going to get it done. I know you truly think in your heart of hearts that Rafael Dos Anjos is the greatest lightweight fighter of all time. But Tony Ferguson...
He's come down from that. He could have been.
Ferguson,
he could have been.
Yeah, whatever. If I
come
could
on, if he defends that belt three times while still on that winning streak, I don't think it's close. But he didn't,
look,
so back to square one.
I could have had wheels and pedals and been a bicycle, but I'm not. Tony Ferguson has been rising through the ranks. You know, say what you want about Ultimate Fighter, but Ferguson has been kicking ass and taking names in the bloodiest division in all of combat sports, and he's been doing well for himself. Now, does he have holes in his game? Yes, he does, but so does Rafael Dos Anjos, for that matter. Both of these guys are well-rounded. Both of them hit hard. Both of them are good off their back. They're good on the ground. But, man, Ferguson is hungry, and I just think he's going to get this done. And look, we've seen Rafael Dos Anjos get dominated before. He is an elite fighter, yes, but he's also not unbeatable either. I think we know that from past history.
No, I don't disagree at all. At the moment, I'm leaning towards Ferguson. This is an interesting clash because these are both pressure fighters. They both like to go forward. They both like to make you break down physically and mentally. They both like to overwhelm you. They just do it in such wildly different ways. RDA is a very methodical pressure fighter. He moves you back. He's not afraid to hit you, to leg kick you. You know, really good wrestling, good takedowns. Exceptional, especially for MMA, guard passing game, especially in the lightweight division, especially using, you know, pressure passes. These are all things he excels at. And then you have Tony Ferguson, who is a wild man, you know, crushing knockout power, very fluid movement, especially, you know, switching stances, not, you know, loves kicking the legs and body at distance, keeps you guessing, keeps you moving backwards. A really good wrestling game, especially from the front headlock position, which is not something I've seen RDA have to deal with before. This is going to be a crazy fight, and at the moment I'm leaning towards Tony Ferguson because he's on a roll. The man's won 8 in a row. It's insane it's insane in the UFC. It's more insane at lightweight. Tremendous fight. Really looking forward to that one. All right. For the rest of that card, I'm curious, are there any other fights on that card for you, Jeff, that you kind of want to touch on that you think look kind of interesting?
Not really.
Let me see here. Diego Sanchez and Marcin Held, not so much. Lamas and Oliveira is not a bad fight. Dariush and Magomedov. Alexa Grasso's UFC debut.
Dariush is a good fighter. That should be a good fight.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking. That's the other one I'm looking forward to, actually, is Dariush and Magomedov. But yeah, the rest of that is, well, it's an Ultimate Fighter finale card, as I said. Adjust your expectations to.
It's an international Ultimate Fighter finale card, which, look, it's still a UFC fight card, and there are still talented guys on there, but this is really about Ferguson Dos Anjos, which is a very underrated fight, don't get me wrong, but that's the reason you're watching this card.
Yeah, that's the interesting fight, really, and it should be a good one. Those two for five rounds. I've been rewatching Tony Ferguson fights, you know, tape study on the guy, and he's a wild man, and he and RDA are going to have, there's some interesting stylistic points where they match up. I'm really interested to see how that plays out. All right. To move on to the news, because I know there's a few things Jeff wants to talk about. You know, let's start with what you wrote about last week. The return of Ronda Rousey. She's going to be main eventing UFC 207 and will be getting a title shot against Amanda Nunes.
That's right, at UFC 207. So we almost thought that Ronda Rousey could have been gone for good, but
still
she
could
is
be.
Coming.
To be fair, she could win and retire.
Look, she's coming back. She's fighting for the title. I have no problem with this. And I know some people are complaining, some fighters are complaining, but this has happened actually multiple times in the UFC before, and I'm not really seeing a problem here.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, look, I understand Juliana Pena being annoyed. She should be, quite frankly.
What has she done?
Well, no, hang on. Here's my point with that. She's been fighting while Ronda's been on hiatus. And she's been winning while Ronda's been on hiatus. And I don't have the biggest problem with Ronda coming back and winning and fighting for the belt.
Juliana Pena has a win over one top 10 opponent. Just one. Kat Zingano.
Yeah, I don't have the biggest problem with her coming with Ronda returning and getting a title shot, especially with the UFC's new management and their philosophies and the ethos they seem to be driven by.
What about the philosophy? Randy Couture retired, and he got off of a title loss, and he came back, walked right back in, and got he went up in weight and got a heavyweight title shot. Randy Couture.
Well, there's two mitigating factors there. One, it's heavyweight, so it sucks. Two, Tim Sylvia was the champion.
That's less. That's less of a mitigating factor than it's Ronda Rousey.
No, I'm going with the fact that heavyweight sucks, and Tim Sylvia was the worst UFC heavyweight champion of all time, and they were desperate to try and either give him a signature win, the belt off of him, at a time when they had
It's the heavyweight. He was retired, Robert. He was retired. He lost the title fight at light heavyweight. He came back and gets an immediate title shot at heavyweight, a title shot.
Now, I mean, look, to be perfectly honest, Valentina Shevchenko should be more pissed off than Juliana Pena.
Look, if it upsets you, if it upsets anybody, there's no excuse. It's a part of the sport. It's a part of combat sports where instances like these can happen. Now, maybe in the future, it will be different. Maybe it should be different. But right now...
Oh, in the future, it's going to get worse. Conor McGregor is going to win, Hang on, no, seriously, though. If Conor McGregor wins the lightweight belt, which he could, and decides he wants to take a year off, which has been hinted at. I'm not okay with that either, but do you really think they're going to take the belts off of him?
Look, have I been okay with what's been going on with Conor McGregor? I feel like, look, I'm keeping this at one situation. We're not talking about Conor McGregor hoarding all the belts. We're talking about Ronda Rousey making her return to MMA and fighting for the women's bantamweight title against Amanda Nunes. And I don't think this is wrong. I don't think it's a bad thing. This has happened many times in the past. Not just in you. Look, did Ricardo Arona not get a title shot coming off a loss against Wanderlei Silva? Did that not happen?
I'm not sure.
Pretty sure.
Hang on. I know the circumstance you're referencing. He got that shot because he beat Wanderlei when the title wasn't on the line.
Yeah, but he still got bell rung and got powerbombed into oblivion by Rampage.
Was it that event?
Still got a title.
No. That's a different event. He got knocked out by Shogun after he beat Wanderlei.
In that case,
it was simply because he beat the champion without the title being on the line in the champion's weight class.
So in this case, it's simply because her name is Ronda Rousey, and she's
Shogun refused to fight Wanderlei was the other half of that equation.
All right. You know what? We know Shogun was in a tournament at the time, as I recall.
Yeah, the same tournament as Wanderlei. They were on opposite sides of the brackets. There's speculation that Wanderlei kind of threw the Arona fight because he didn't want to fight Shogun. And then beat him after the fact, they gave him a title shot. And in no small part because, again, Shogun didn't want to fight Wanderlei. Those two
didn't want to fight each other. There's speculation that Hillary Clinton had leaks in her campaign murder. That doesn't mean you can prove it or it's even true. So,
at a minimum, Wanderlei's effort in that Arona fight was.
Robert, we're getting off track here. I'm talking about facts. Ronda Rousey made this division. She made it possible for all the female fighters in the UFC to have a job and to train and fight for a living, doing what they want to do and doing what they apparently love. She made all that possible. Cyborg did not make that possible. And you want to know why? Because Cyborg was off for over a year because she was suspended for doping. Okay? And guess what else? After Cyborg beat Gina Carano, that was a big fight. I was there for that fight. It was a huge fight. But guess what? Women's MMA floundered. Floundered after that fight, Robert. No one cared about Cyborg crushing opponents in one-sided fights where she was clearly overmatched and way too big for all of her opponents. No one was interested in those fights. Ronda Rousey revived women's MMA and made it viable. And no one – that's a fact. It is fact. This is not opinion. This is not speculation. It's because of Ronda Rousey that women's MMA is in the UFC. No one can truly deny this. And she did lose and she got knocked out, but she defended her belt 6 times. I mean, she was a champion of Strikeforce. She was the champion of the UFC and defended her belt 6 times. Okay? Holly Holm, your so-called greatest combat athlete in history, she couldn't defend her belt once. Misha Tate, who beat Holly Holm, couldn't defend her belt once. There's no problem with this. Look, Anderson Silva got an immediate title shot despite getting knocked out in the second round. Okay, and he lost the first round against Chris Weidman too. These are more facts. my point is,
what time is there between those fights?
There's a precedent for this happening. There's a precedent for this happening in the past. 10-plus years of MMA. It's happened in Pride. It's happened in UFC. It's happening again here. Now, I don't think it should happen all the time, but I'm okay with it happening.
It's happening all the time.
It's not happening all the time.
Oh, come on. Not all the time. There is a disturbing trend at the moment favoring that line.
I don't think it's disturbing, but people, were getting annoyed that Conor McGregor wasn't announced for UFC 205, and they were begging for that fight with Eddie Alvarez. Okay, that was. And look, you're going to New York for the first time. You need the fight makes sense. I'm not saying, I don't like what's happening with the featherweight title either. I think he should have been stripped of the belt a long time ago. But now that you look, the UFC has created a monster in Conor McGregor, and this is part of dealing with that monster. But as for Ronda Rousey, I don't have a problem with her coming back and getting the title shot. And I don't think her first fight back should necessarily be against Cyborg either. And, you know, I have a whole other can of worms about Cyborg, but I think it's the right fight because just because it's Ronda Rousey, everyone is going to be watching that fight coming back. So there you go.
Yeah, and because the new owners – oh, man. For those of you who don't know or haven't looked this up, I'd encourage you to do so. Look up some of the financial articles that have been written about how they got the UFC purchase finance and some of the structures that were put in place for that deal to go through. Cash is, I mean, look, the UFC has always been a for-profit organization. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But when they were fully privately owned and operating the way they were free to kind of evoke the ethical position of this is where the best fight the best.
Okay.
The financial structure of the new group, including how some of the debt is paid off and monitored, is going to substantially alter that. They're going to be not just cash is our priority. I mean, again, the UFC has always been about making money. They're going to wind up going full blown, you know, cash is king to the exclusion of athletic credibility.
You think they're going to become Bellator MMA 2.0 is what you're saying?
Oh, not that bad, but there's a big part of how they're going to have to, about the financial structure for how they're going to have to operate going forward.
Everyone says these things. Everyone said when they brought in Brock Lesnar, they were ruining the sport and they were trampling the legacy of the sport by booking him against Randy Couture for the heavyweight title. Everyone like you likes to be doom and gloom, likes to be Bertrand Zobris, Leonardo DiCaprio, we're 1 minute to midnight, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not saying there won't be growing pains. There will be. But I think eventually things are going to
settle. They just laid off 15% of the workforce?
Look, Robert, is that not a reality of mergers and buyouts?
Oh, no, I'm
that
not.
Always happens.
No, it is. Every time that, corporate restructuring is very much a thing.
Look, Lucasfilm got bought out by Disney, they shut down LucasArts. LucasArts got shuttered. 150 people lost their jobs. And no one talks about that. No one complains about that. It's just, and I feel bad for the people that lost their jobs, but I feel like that's why when you're in, I feel like if you're in a corporate job and you're in a corporate position, whatever it is, you always have to, I believe, be on the back of your mind of things happening like that and just be prepared for those kind of things, because the corporation, it's always about keeping profits high and costs low, is it not?
No, and it should be. And quite frankly, some of the decisions they made, I agree with. You know, some of those international offices just didn't need to be there.
And here's some other ideas. I think UFC may be cutting down on maybe 10 events, at least maybe next year. I think that could maybe be a good idea. I think maybe they have a few too many events, especially pay-per-views.
Yeah, we don't need one every week. I mean, that's really unnecessary.
I think every other week would be fine, but we don't need more than 10 or 11 monthly pay-per-views, honestly. We definitely don't need more than 12, because look, this year they had to turn the original UFC 96 into an FS1 card due to injuries and things. So I feel in anticipation of that, cutting
and,
down
well,
on
let's
the
also
number
be
of
clear,
events.
If and this is the other thing I wanted to talk with you briefly
okay.
about. If Daniel Cormier or Anthony Johnson gets injured, they might just cancel
right.
UFC 206. That's a weak card.
Right. Well, and that's why I'm saying have less pay-per-views, have less live events, because then you can give your roster, you can give your schedule more of a cushion if things have to get shuffled around, so you have less situations where you can avoid turning a pay-per-view like the original UFC 196 into an FS1 event, or canceling it altogether like you, like Jones versus Henderson, or the second time they tried to do Aldo versus Mendez. So I'm not necessarily against that either, and I think there are going to be growing pains, but that could help things too. Now, we're also hearing a lot of talk about unions and fighter representation and all those things. I'm not against like fighters unionizing, but my belief is if fighters want an association or if they want a union, that's something they're going to have to do together, and they're going to have to band together and do that to make that happen. I don't feel it's the UFC or the new owner's responsibility to make to set up.
In fact, it's pointedly look, a union is always, by definition, the interests of the union run contrary to the interests of management, almost to the as long as the alternative is not business shuts down, they're always going to butt heads, which is fine. They're supposed to. That's the whole point.
But look, I've also said in the past, I wouldn't like, let's say the UFC set up a deal so their fighters are actually considered full employees and not independent contractors. I don't think that would be bad either.
It's an inevitability.
Let's say under this deal, like all fighters get health, like UFC healthcare. They get maybe a 401k. I don't think that would be a bad thing. And if you say it's not feasible, a few years ago they said something like the USADA plan wasn't feasible either. And now people are complaining about USADA because guys are getting caught. And somehow that's USADA's fault. It's not USADA's fault that guys are doing what they shouldn't be doing and not checking. And if they're taking gated supplements, not doing their due diligence with the supplements either. Just don't take the supplements if they're that risky. I don't buy any of these excuses. So I guess what I'm trying to say here, look, I'm not against like better treatment for the fighters or fighter union, but I'm just realistic where if you want a union, like the fighters are going to have to make that happen. It's up to them. It's not the UFC's obligation to do that.
Again, unions always run counter to management. No corporation is ever happy about a union.
Right.
There's a reason
right.
Walmart will fire you if you try to set one up.
But, and I know a lot of people are ticked off about the Reebok deal. I think there are valid criticisms about Reebok, but, and it sucks that fighters can't get, like, their sponsorships anymore, but at the same time, there's no law saying they should get those sponsorships either. So it's not fundamentally wrong to me that some of these things are happening, and I think as things develop, this could ultimately, I can see, yes, some guys are hurting right now and suffering right now, but I think in the long run, it can be for the betterment of both the sport and the fighters as well, including the new ownership. But we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, it's an interesting time.
Look.
Yeah, that's certainly for sure.
For so many years, New York was the one holdout where we couldn't watch or see our sport promoted. That's no longer the reality. We have new. It's a new era. and we'll just have to see how it pans out. But Robert, thanks for the time this week. I got to run, so be on the lookout on the Wrestling Zone tonight, and I will talk to you guys later. Thank you.
See you next week, Jeff.
Oh,
thanks
Dr.
for calling
Strange
in.
Doctor Strange review. Doctor Strange official exclusive review of Doctor Strange next week. Be on the lookout for that.
I most certainly will. I'm looking forward to seeing that one myself. All right, Jeff, I'll see
you
next
week.
Thank you,
guys. By the hoary host of Hogoth, happy Halloween.
All right. Many thanks to Jeff. I'll look forward to him being back next week. So anyone else out there, I'm going to kind of finish running down the event, and then I have, again, some of the issues that have been raised in the news lately I want to touch on. So if anyone else wants to call in, the number, I'll go ahead and pimp this again, is 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. All right. Back to Fight Night 98. Again, Ferguson and RDA is going to be a really great fight. RDA, again, I put this out there prior to his fight with Eddie Alvarez. He was on his way to maybe being the best lightweight ever. He'd won, what, 5 in a row, which is nothing to sneeze at lightweight, including winning the belt, including defending the belt. If he had defended that belt a grand total of 3 times, if he'd beaten Eddie Alvarez and beaten, say, Khabib in a rematch or beaten Conor McGregor, if he gets to that 3 title defense threshold, he'd be on an 8-fight winning streak in the lightweight division with more tight with I think that would be the tying the number of successful title defenses. So I'm going to remember this because BJ Penn holds the record. He beat Sean Sherk. He beat Diego Sanchez, and he beat Kenny Florian. And I think that's it. Because he beat Joe Stevenson to become the champion. And then he lost it to Frankie Edgar. But I think he only had the 3 title defenses. And if on that, you know, massive winning streak and avenging, you know, the loss to Khabib, he had, you know, equaled that, I don't think I would have had a problem calling him the best lightweight ever. Unfortunately, he lost, which negates the entire discussion. He's still a very good fighter and still he's still a very good fighter. He's still only lost twice since 12. Starting in 2012, the man is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He is 10-2 over the last 4 years. All right, this is a very good fighter. He's one of the most consistent. But talking about best ever, there's, you know, certain milestones that have to be ticked off, and he just got stopped by Eddie Alvarez. If he rebounds, like wins here and becomes the champion again and gets a couple of defenses, we can maybe revisit that discussion. But you know, Tony Ferguson's on an 8-fight winning streak. Tony Ferguson and Max Holloway, who I want to talk about in a little bit for a similar reason, both have massive winning streaks. Tony Ferguson has won 8 fights in a row at lightweight. Max Holloway has won 9 at featherweight. These are the only 2 fighters in UFC history to win at least 8 fights in a row without a title fight being in there somewhere. But because Conor McGregor is, well, doing whatever he's doing, and because Jose Aldo is righteously pissed off at the totality of the circumstance, neither of those divisions are moving forward all that much at the moment. And if McGregor wins the lightweight belt, chaos will ensue. I'm rooting for Eddie Alvarez pretty much just for that reason. I don't want that level of insanity infecting 2 divisions with that much talent. Because Max Holloway took a fight 9 in a row. The man should be fighting for the title. Just straight up, flat out, end of sentence. 9 consecutive wins at featherweight. He should be fighting for the belt. I mean, whether that's the crappy made-up interim belt that Aldo has or the actual belt that McGregor refuses to defend, and it should be for the real one, my opinion. That's what he should be doing. Instead, he's fighting Anthony Pettis and could lose it all. I mean, if he loses to Pettis, he is not quite at square one, but all of a sudden, he's got to win at least three more fights before he is in title discussion generally. It's a stupidly risky fight. Yeah. I also really... Look, I just want to see Max Holloway fight either Conor McGregor again, because their first fight was... McGregor won, but that one went the distance. And Max Holloway is a very different fighter now. I'd love to see him fight Jose Aldo. I love how they match up, but nope, can't see it. Because, you know, McGregor is whatever he is. And Aldo is just about fed up with everything. And I don't blame McGregor trying to make history and make money, and I don't blame Aldo for being pissed. He should be. But it does just kind of suck out loud in a lot of ways. But Tony Ferguson, again, on an 8-fight winning streak. He's beaten some tough guys over that stretch, too. I mean, okay, beating Lando Venata, late notice replacement, still a good fight. He smoked Gleison Tibau, Josh Thompson, and Edson Barboza. Those are tough guys. Gleison Tibau is the winningest lightweight, I believe, ever in the UFC. Holds the most wins in the lightweight division in UFC history. Gleison Tibau's not an easy guy to get over. Ferguson tapped him in the first round. Josh Thompson's a tough veteran, and Tony Ferguson beat him. I don't even have an appropriate metaphor here, or simile. You know, the old like a government mule, maybe. Like he owed him money. Like he insulted his sister. I mean, that was just a vicious, bloody beatdown. And then Edson Barboza showing the best form of his career recently. I mean, Barboza's won three of his last five. His only two losses are to Michael Johnson and Ferguson. I mean, you know, Barboza's showing great form, and Ferguson kind of just ran him over. And I'm really looking forward to this fight. These two match up incredibly well. They're both pressure fighters, as I said before. They just do it differently. They're both kind of forward motion, but Tony Ferguson is wild and packs more punching power. Not to say that RDA has pillow fists, but, you know, if we're talking who hits harder, it's Ferguson. RDA probably kicks harder. Kicking game is going to be interesting for this one. RDA has vicious leg kicks. He's going to be at a height and reach disadvantage, which is also interesting because he kind of likes to kind of bull forward and close distance. And a lot of the guys who have had height and reach advantages over him have just let him do it. Donald Cerrone did, Anthony Pettis did. I don't think the difference was that extreme with Pettis. But in this case, Ferguson doesn't mind fighting from the outside and knows how to keep a fight there. He's fine fighting inside as well, but fighting long is one of the things he does well. He also excels at in-between motions. If you're just kind of moving and you're maybe in range for him to hit you, he's going to hit you. It might just be a jab. It might be a body kick, usually straight line. Might be an inside or an outside leg kick. But if you're moving and he's really good at attacking the trailing leg. So if you're moving, you know, whichever way you're moving, the leg that is moving last is going to get hit. He's really good at that. He excels at using elbows, which is not something a lot of fighters know how to do. He's great with stepping elbows in the clinch. Off of his back, he's active, and the problem he's going to run into off of his back is RDA's top game. Against someone like, you know, Danny Castillo, or who's the other guy who took Ferguson down fairly successfully? A lot of guys have. He's got good hips. But he doesn't mind fighting off of his back because he's active. He throws elbows, he rolls, you know, he's doing stuff. And against someone who's just trying to hold position, that's one thing. RDA will smother you, and he will beat you up doing it. He's not just going to hold on. He's going to posture up. He's going to punch you. He's going to elbow you. He's going to smash through your guard. He's going to hit pass. He's going to pressure pass. And if you get too loose with him on the ground, he's going to make you pay. He's going to hit you. He's going to grab something. One of the areas I'm interested in as far as wrestling goes, because RDA has very good takedowns. especially against the fence. But I'm very interested to see how they match up both in the clinch and in a wrestling position called the front headlock, because that's not a position that gets a whole lot of play in MMA. There are guys who use it to varying degrees of success, but they don't use it the same way that, you know, Tony Ferguson uses it very well. If he gets a hold of your head in that front headlock, he's going to threaten you with a darce, which you will dive on. I don't want to say he can't tap RDA with that, but RDA is a very high-level, very experienced jiu-jitsu practitioner, so he's going to be aware of it. But he also excels at controlling you from that position, controlling your head, snapping you down to the mat if that's where he wants you, working uppercuts. I mean, Boss Rutten used that position, front headlock, to great effect because he could threaten with a guillotine, and then while you're defending, he's going to knee you in the body or head. John Jones is very good from that position. And it's not one that I've ever seen RDA have to contest on a consistent basis. I think Pettis might have tried to guillotine him once or twice, but he was always going down from takedowns in those situations. And Tony Ferguson doesn't use it just for that. He uses it to control and to set up things. So that'll be an interesting line. I'm curious to see how Ferguson does over five rounds if we go long. He's never been five rounds, and that's always a question. If you've never seen a guy fight five rounds, you just, by definition, do not know how they're going to perform over five rounds. We've seen RDA go five rounds. He went five hard rounds with Anthony Pettis, all at his pace. That was not an easy fight for him. That's the only time he's gone all five, but we've seen him do it. I'm not sure how RDA's chin will hold up to the power that Tony Ferguson brings, because Tony Ferguson, he can, again, crushing power. It gets lost because he does a lot of, you know, again, wild stuff, and his grappling is kind of how he's finished things recently. Tony Ferguson hits really hard. Body work's going to be very interesting for this fight. RDA does great with both a right hook to the body and his left body kick. Ferguson does a lot of really good body work, especially from distance. Uses a lot of front push kicks or snap kicks into the abdomen. Or if you're circling, he'll throw a round kick. And if he's at distance, to keep you thinking about stuff, he's going to kick you in the body or in the leg. But, you know, and so body work's going to be very interesting. I'm just psyched for this fight. I'm leaning towards Ferguson right now, but you know, both of these guys can win this fight. We don't know yet, I believe, who is fighting. We don't know half of the fight for the prestigious honor of becoming the Ultimate Fighter Latin America Season 3 winner. I know nothing about it, so I'm not going to say anything. Don't care. At lightweight, Diego Sanchez is fighting Marcin Held. Marcin Held had a very good run in Bellator. Marcin Held's only 24? The man has almost 30 professional fights. Jeez. He has a very long career in Bellator. Only has three losses. He lost to Michael Chandler, he lost to Dave Jansen, and he lost to Will Brooks. The Brooks fight was for the belt. Very good record. He avenged that loss to Dave Jansen, too. Interested to see his debut, but I'm not sure. He's a submission guy. I'm not sure how that's going to square up with Diego Sanchez. Sanchez has just been trading wins and losses. Some of them deserved, some of them not. Both the Gomi and Pearson fights, I think he lost. But he's coming off that loss to Joe Lozon, the first real TKO loss of his career. The other TKO was a doctor stoppage after BJ Penn opened a hole in his forehead that you could see his soul through. But if pattern holds, he'll rebound, he'll get a win here, and I kind of think that's the way things are going. Ricardo Lamas is going to fight Charles Oliveira. This is a rescheduled fight, sort of. Lamas was supposed to fight BJ Penn a couple of weeks back. I was not looking forward to that fight, because Lamas was going to smash BJ Penn, especially at featherweight. He was going to smash him. But after Penn got injured, Lamas versus Oliveira for this fight. This is a very interesting fight. Ricardo Lamas coming off of the loss to Max Holloway, but he's one of the better featherweights in the world. His only losses in the UFC are to Jose Aldo, which was a title fight, Chad Mendes, and Max Holloway. Now, Mendes is out of the picture because of steroids. But, you know, he was a very good fighter. And, you know, Max Holloway is one of the best, and Jose Aldo is the best featherweight ever. He doesn't, point being, he doesn't lose very often or to, you know, the rank and file. Charles Oliveira is a supremely talented fighter, but he's really struggled to find consistency. That loss to Pettis really hurt him, really hurt fat Charles Oliveira. I mean, Oliveira's recent record is very good. He's 5-2 over his last seven. His only losses are to Max Holloway and Anthony Pettis. I mean, again, Holloway, one of the best, and he had a weird neck injury in that fight, too. And then he was winning the Pettis fight. I mean, he got submitted and he lost, but if you watch the substance of that fight, Oliveira acquitted himself very well. He was winning. I'm not sure about this one. Lamas is a good, tough, all-around fighter. Oliveira's, you know, good leg kicks, good power. If Oliveira can get Lamas down, and Oliveira has a pretty good takedown game. It's not exceptional, but it's pretty good. If he can force Lamas into grappling exchanges, that's where he excels. That's where he's going to win. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to do it. Ricardo Lamas is not easy to get down. And if he can't get him down, Oliveira is very good off of his back, but I don't think Lamas is going to be stupid enough to just fall into his guard. I don't know. I'm actually leaning Lamas, but that's an interesting fight. The other interesting fight here at lightweight, Beneil Dariush is going to fight Rashid Magomedov. Beneil Dariush has a habit of making me look stupid. And I don't like fighters who do that because it means I can't get a read on them. His loss to Ramzy Nijem, I felt made me look, you know, because I thought he should have just kind of beat Nijem. The Jim Miller win kind of made me, because I think I picked Miller to beat him. And then he just, you know, beat Miller pretty handily. Then he, you know, loses to Michael Chiesa, knocks out James Vick. But, you know, Dariush just, you know, has this habit of kind of going contrary to what I think is going to happen. His opponent is Rashid Magomedov, who is 4-0 in the UFC. He's beaten Tony Martin, Rodrigo Dom, Elias Silverio, and Gilbert Burns. Rashid Magomedov's very good. He only has one loss as a professional. It was a split decision. He's on a huge winning streak. Not just 3-0 in the UFC, not just 4-0, excuse me, in the UFC. He has won 12 in a row overall. Yeah, again, massive winning streak. This is a really good fight. I'm leaning towards Dariush. Dariush has a lot of high level experience. Magomedov doesn't. Dariush is a very good grappler. So is Magomedov. I mean, this is a fight. This is a really good fight. I'm leaning towards Dariush. I won't be shocked if Magomedov wins. I'm going to phrase it that way. All right. And kicking off the main card, Alexa Grasso is making her UFC debut. Grasso is undefeated. She was going to be kind of a big deal for Invicta. I covered a couple of her encounters there. She's 4-0 in Invicta, and that includes wins over Mizuki Inoue and Jody Escabel. There was serious talk about Grasso fighting for the belt over there. I'm trying to remember if she... No, she's always fought at strawweight. I couldn't remember if she dabbled at flyweight or not for them. She's a pretty big get for the UFC. Alexa Grasso's pretty awesome. Good boxing fundamentals. Young fighter. She's only in her early 20s. How early? Yeah, she's only 23. She could help kind of open up or, you know, continue their progress through Mexico. Alexa Grasso, you know, very talented fighter. She's fighting Heather Jo Clark, who is coming off of a loss to Karolina Kowalkiewicz. She beat Beck Rawlings. This is kind of a showcase for Alexa Grasso. Clark could win. You know, it's a fight. You know, anyone can win. But this is kind of designed to get Grasso, who is Spanish. She's from Guadalajara, I think. And she was born in Guadalajara. So I mean, she's a native Mexican fighting in a division where there's a lot of immediate upward mobility possible at women's strawweight. Kicking off the main card. This is designed for her to win. Now, she still has to go out there and win, which is the, you know, the important part of that equation. But it's kind of, I'm going with her, and it's, again, she's supposed to win here. All right, the rest of this card. Eric Perez will fight Felipe Aranches. Perez, you know, you guys remember when Eric Perez was going to be a thing? Because I do. Then he had that loss to Mizugaki. It was the loss to Caraway that caused him to take over a year off. He's won two in a row since coming back, but he's fighting again Felipe Arantes. Arantes has lost. He's been with the UFC for a while. He's got some. He's only recently dropped to bantamweight. He beat Yves Dubois and Gerard Sanders. He's got a pretty nasty armbar. I remember this guy. That's not a gimme for Perez. That's a good fight. I'm going to lean Perez, but I'm not sure about that one. Marco Beltran was supposed to fight Guido Canetti. However, Canetti got injured. This was actually a rematch. No, not injured. Excuse me. There's a potential anti-doping violation, so Canetti's off the card. And Beltran does not have a replacement named yet. That might change, though. I'll take Beltran in the dark. Eric Montaño is fighting Max Griffin. I'm actually leaning towards Griffin from what I just remember off the top of my head. At bantamweight, Henry Briones is fighting Douglas Silva de Andrade. I actually kind of like Briones in that fight. Then on Fight Pass, Sam Alvey is fighting Alex Nicholson. I have very little reason to pick against Sam Alvey if his opponent does nothing to stop him from hitting them in the face. Alex Nicholson kind of struggles if people hit him in the face. Sam Alvey might look like your goofy next-door neighbor who you think works at a tech firm, but the man hits like there are bricks in his gloves. I got Sam Alvey. At lightweight, Marco Polo Reyes will fight Jason Novelli. Polo Reyes coming off of that crazy war with Dong-Yun Kim. Maestro Dong-Yun Kim, not the stun gun. That was a crazy fight. Utter insanity. Rewatch that fight for those of you who haven't. It was on the prelims, I believe, of UFC 199. Crazy fight. I'll take him over Novelli. And featherweight, kicking everything off, Enrique Barzola fights Chris Avila. I don't remember anything about either of these gentlemen. I'll go with Barzola. His last name is shorter. All right, that event comes to you this coming Saturday. From Arena Ciudad de Mexico. My Spanish is terrible, so apologies. From Mexico City, Mexico. So be on the lookout for people not adapted to the altitude or the pollution in Mexico City, both of which are a factor. Seriously, Mexico City is like 2 miles high. You got to acclimatize to that, and the pollution is a serious issue. I will have live coverage of that in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com, so stop by and say hello. It's going to be a long night. I appreciate it. All right. In the news, because a lot of stuff has happened since we were last here with you, and I want to talk about a few of these things. First up, I do want to talk about George St. Pierre declaring himself a free agent. This is an interesting situation. George St. Pierre is one of the few fighters with the UFC with the means financially, the intellect, and the disposition to challenge the status quo in a lot of ways. Now, I think GSP GSP wants to return to fighting. He wants to return to fight for the UFC. He's been off for 3 years. He wants to come back and fight. I don't have a problem with this. GSP is one of, if not the best ever. The problem is his last fight, again in 2013, a controversial split decision win over Johnny Hendricks, took place prior to the implementation of the Reebok deal. Now, George St. Now a lot of fighters lost money with the Reebok deal. Some of them gained money. I'm not sure who they were, but I'm sure they existed. George St. Pierre didn't just lose money. George St. Pierre, if he were to come back and fight under the current Reebok deal, loses a lot of money. George St. Pierre is a major star in Canada. He's a major pay-per-view draw, certainly compared to the average UFC main event. He is a major draw, has a substantial fan base. His sponsorships for an event, I have very little doubt, were over $1 million. People paid a lot of money to have their product associated with George St. Pierre. Now, George St. Pierre can't sign an individual Reebok deal. He has a deal with Under Armour and their competitors. He can't just willy-nilly break an exclusive apparel deal with the second or third biggest provider of sports apparel in the world. And he's compensated well by Under Armour for that, I'm sure. So if he were to fight, the point being here, if he were to fight for the UFC just under the terms of the Reebok deal, the sponsorship money he would make from Reebok is what? He's the highest non-champion tier. Isn't that 25K? I think it's 20 or 25,000. For a man to go from making over $1 million a fight in sponsorship money to 20,000, yeah, no. You're going to have to pay him at least that difference. And again, when I say north of $1 million, that could be more. It wouldn't shock me at all if it was, you know, say $1 million per sponsor. And his shorts weren't plastered with sponsors, but two or three, and it's a lot of money he'd be losing out on. And George St. Pierre knows his worth. You know, he knows that if you want me to fight and I'm going to be stuck with this crappy Reebok deal, you're going to compensate me for the lost income in this other way. I imagine this will settle out of court for a very specific couple of reasons. One, the UFC wants to make money off of GSP, which is fine. You know, he's going to make money off of them. They're going to make money off of him. That's how the system works. Two, the UFC really doesn't want their contracts to be strenuously by any sort of legal body. They have contracts that are, to the best of their working knowledge, legal, but if you take that, the UFC's contract, before the wrong judge, suddenly you have case law precedent against your employment practices. And then all of a sudden, all 550 fighters on your roster can look at that and go, wait a minute. They have a vested interest in not allowing jurisprudence to rigorously examine those documents. It'll be interesting to see going forward. I need to say this. I hate GSP fighting Michael Bisping for the middleweight belt. I hated Michael Bisping defending the belt against Dan Henderson. Dan Henderson at least fought at middleweight. He was outside the top 15 and older than dirt and with a compromised chin and compromised cardio. And the entire reason he got a title shot was novelty, rather than the merits of athletic competition. There were more meritorious arguments to be made in favor of Dan Henderson fighting for the middleweight belt than there are for George St. Pierre to fight for the middleweight belt. You have a division with five or six guys in a position to realistically challenge for the belt. Now, at the moment, I know you've got Jacare and Rockhold fighting. You got Weidman and Romero fighting. You've got Derek Brunson fighting Robert Whittaker, and Musasi and Uriah Hall are going to rematch. But here's the thing. Any of those first four I mentioned could and arguably should be fighting for the title, specifically Jacare, specifically. Robert Whittaker has a pretty good claim to a title shot. You have these, you know, guys who are just like me. I can fight for the belt. And to just kind of summarily dismiss them all, it doesn't sit well with me. It just doesn't. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. Again, I imagine this gets settled. GSP signs a new contract, gets what he wants, essentially. And we all move on. But if this goes full through litigation, he has retained a very good lawyer from a very good law firm who knows a lot about contract law. And you don't want someone like that up in front of a judge arguing about the merits and conditions within your contract if there is even the slightest hint that his judgment could come against you or that, you know, your contracts are less than 100% ethical. Because if that goes wrong, if that does not go their way, everything goes south in a hurry for them. All right, Jeff and I talked a bit about Ronda Rousey's return and getting a title shot. I understand it. I'm not the biggest fan of Rousey coming back from, you know, over a year off and a violent knockout. But there's not exactly a clear-cut contender that she's leapfrogging. I know Juliana Pena's making noise, but no one cares. Valentina Shevchenko should be making noise, but she isn't. And, I mean, you know, who else is there? Holly Holm just lost to Shevchenko. Misha Tate got violently finished in the first round by Amanda Nunes. Kat Zingano just got beat by Juliana Pena. You know, you're not specifically squashing one deserving contender. You're more telling the entire division that you don't matter. I don't like the message that sends to the fighters, and the fighters shouldn't like that message. But there is not, you know, when Dan Henderson jumped the line, I was personally aggravated, mostly because I thought, again, Ronaldo, Jacare, Souza should be fighting for the belt. There isn't, in this case, there isn't that clear-cut, 100% deserving number one contender who's getting squished because money. There's, you know, Pena, who's on a pretty good roll, but again, you know, the biggest name on a resume is Kat Zingano, and I like Zingano, but it wasn't a great fight. No one really remembers it. And Shevchenko just had a really great win over Holly Holm, but, you know, I mean, she lost to Amanda Nunes, but she won the third round of that fight and was coming on strong, and there's a very legitimate argument that if that had been a five-round fight, she would have won. I mean, I honestly think Shevchenko has a generally stronger case than Pena in terms of, you know, I should be the next contender. And her case isn't even, you know, airtight. I understand it. I don't care for the press. I don't care for what it says. You know, I wasn't the biggest fan of Randy Couture getting an immediate title shot after, you know, coming out of retirement and off of a violent knockout loss to Chuck Liddell. But it was at heavyweight, and the rules don't apply to heavyweight because heavyweight. Tim Sylvia was the champion, and the UFC was desperate. Tim Sylvia sucked. Even when Tim Sylvia was good, he kind of sucked. He had the worst two-fight stretch imaginable because he beat Andre Arlovsky to get the belt back. Then they had the trilogy fight, and the third fight between Arlovsky and Sylvia is so bad. It is so bad. If you were fortunate enough to have never seen this fight, don't see it. It is awful. It's 25 minutes of suck. And Sylvia won a decision. So they matched him up with Jeff Munson, who was the he was the deserving number one contender. He was on a substantial overall winning streak. Had won, I think, 3 or 4 in the UFC. And then the fight with Munson happens, and that fight sucks. It's not a good fight either. Tim Sylvia wins the unanimous decision. So you have your heavyweight champion having crappy fights against competition no one's heard of. They were pretty desperate to get a deserving contender in there, to get someone in there who would get interest in Tim Sylvia. And look, the worst case scenario for the UFC was, here's Randy Couture, his chin's a little shot, he's over 40, he's coming, at least Tim Sylvia can knock him out, and we'll have a signature performance, and we can maybe market the guy better. I mean, the fact that Randy Couture comes out and puts on one of the all-time great performances in the sport's history, coming out of retirement, fighting, you know, well over 40, fighting a guy who's 6'10", who has to cut weight to make 265. Couture's a small heavyweight, and decisively handling him over 5 rounds was just a happy side effect. I mean, really, it should have been. There was a lot of talk about Brandon Vera getting that title shot that went to Couture, but Vera had. That was about the time his contract dispute started up, which you kind of precluded him. But there weren't a whole lot of deserving contenders there either. I don't feel that's the case here at strawweight. You know, again, you're just telling the rest of the division that you don't matter. That's not a good signal to send your division, your fighters. It's just not. But the UFC has to make money, and Ronda Rousey will make money. There's a lot of talk that if Rousey wins, we'll finally get the Cyborg fight. I'm not sold on that. I'm not sold on Ronda winning. There are things about this fight that favor Ronda Rousey. No two ways about it. There are things that don't. There are a fair amount of unknowns in this equation. You know, she's been off for a year. She's had her first real violent loss. Is her chin maybe compromised? Is ring rust going to be a factor? How's she going to do when she gets hit in the face? And is Amanda Nunes going to be able to avoid the clinch finally? Clinch break if she falls into it. There's factors that favor Ronda. There's factors that favor Amanda. I just don't like the fact that it tells the rest of the division it doesn't matter that you've been fighting and winning. It matters that you're not Ronda Rousey. And, if Ronda wins, will she fight Cyborg? Maybe. She might win and retire. She might actually just win and say, I wanted to retire as an undefeated champion. At least I'm retiring as a champion. And I'm done. I'm going to go make movies. Bye. That wouldn't shock me. Shouldn't shock any of you either. The rest of that card, though, that's UFC 207, is a pretty good card. The co-main event is Dominic Cruz and Cody Garbrandt. That's a really interesting fight. Cody Garbrandt is easily the hardest puncher that Dominic Cruz has ever fought. Cody Garbrandt also has a boxing background. And a lot of how Dominic Cruz moves was effectively reverse engineered from boxing. So when you get wrestle boxers like Uriah Faber, or at the time, maybe a little bit at the time, Demetrius Johnson, or Brian Bowles, or Scott Jorgensen are much better examples. Or guys who kind of know how to strike but aren't good with the movement, like TJ Dillashaw. They don't know how to respond to what he's doing because even Dillashaw, while he's become a very good overall kind of striker, his background is wrestling. Guys who don't know how to respond to that style of movement because they've never been exposed to it. Cody Garbrandt has. He was a successful amateur boxer. So he knows stuff that Cruz does that, a Uriah Faber freezes because he has no idea what's going on. Garbrandt might not freeze. Now, that's not a given. It's just something to pay attention to. Garbrandt's very young in his career. He has no experience. He's never fought anyone even close to the level of Cruz. I mean, the biggest name on Cody Garbrandt's resume is either Thomas Almeida or Takeya Mizugaki, depending on how you weight either of those gentlemen. And look, neither of those guys is anywhere near the level of Dominic Cruz. We've never seen Cody Garbrandt have to push back. We've never seen him have to overcome adversity. We've never seen him frustrated. We've never seen him fight five rounds. These are questions. We've never seen Dominic Cruz hit by someone who hits this hard. We've never seen Cruz have to fight a fundamental striker like Cody Garbrandt. There's things I want to... I like the fight. I am very curious to see how things pan out for that fight. It's a good co-main event. UFC 206 got a... No, it was UFC 207 with Ronda and... With Rousey and Nunes, excuse me. UFC 206 kind of sucks. The main event is Daniel Cormier and Anthony Johnson, which is a fine enough fight. Look, light heavyweight is uninteresting without John Jones, just generally speaking. It is the victim of a rigid caste system. And the only interesting fighter in the division, at the top of the division, is going to arbitration with USADA, and then we'll have to deal with the corrupted cesspool that is the Nevada State Athletic Commission. So there's a lot working against this fight. Daniel Cormier, and, again, Cormier and Johnson's a fine enough fight, but you know, there's nothing bolstering this card. The co-main event is Max Holloway and Anthony Pettis, and I don't like that fight simply because, again, Holloway should be fighting for the belt. I love that fight on paper. I'm going to love the action because Anthony Pettis and Max Holloway are going to throw down. I like Holloway's chances. I just like Max Holloway, generally speaking. But that card is weak, generally. Certainly for the Toronto marketplace, it's very weak. I want to look up the card here. 206, Cormier versus Johnson 2. Yeah, you have Valerie Letourneau. You have Zach Makovsky. Yeah, this is a weak card. This is a very weak card. There's a good the main event for the Fight Pass prelims is Cub Swanson and Duho Choi. I like that fight. But this is a weak card. You get the only two interesting prospects at light heavyweight, Nikita Krylov and Misha Serkinov, who are going to fight. But that overall card is very weak. Is very weak. It's not going to do well financially, especially coming between UFC 205, which is going to be a monster, and UFC 207, which is going to be pretty big. There's a few weak cards coming up before the end of the year. Bader versus Nogueira 2 is pretty weak. I'm interested to see how Tomas Almeida rebounds, but it's a weak card. UFC Fight Night 102 is laughably weak. I mean, this is Mark Radulich's favorite card ever. The top two fights are heavyweights. But that's a weak card. That is a weak card. Jeez. The most interesting fight on that card is actually at bantamweight. Rafael dos Anjos is fighting Aljamain Sterling. Everything else is weak. The Tournament of Champions finale actually looks pretty good because Johnson's fighting. Demetrius Johnson will be defending the belt. But you know, there's a few weak events to close out the year. They should be closing it out strong. UFC 207 is big. The event on Fox right before that, not great, but not bad. All right. Is there anything else in the news I really wanted to talk about? I think that's it. I think that's everything I had. The last thing I wanted to note, and this has been talked about by people much more plugged into the MMA world than I am, there is a shockingly high amount of fighter discontent in the UFC. From stars like GSP all the way down to, you know, the rank and file, there's a lot of fighters not happy with the organization at the moment. And that's an interesting thing. It's something that bears watching going forward, because I don't think we've ever – there's always been, you know, a few stars have butted heads with the UFC. Occasionally you get patches of the rank and file that are unhappy for whatever reason, both valid and invalid. This is the first time I think we've seen just a general level of discontent, of dissatisfaction to this level. It really bears watching going forward how that's going to play out. The UFC's new owners have done some corporate restructuring. A lot of jobs have gone away. A couple of overseas offices for the UFC are being just terminated. They lost some pretty important personnel. A lot of them, I imagine a fair amount of them can be replaced. They lost a few key personnel. That'll be – so how they restructure going forward is going to be an extraordinarily interesting proposition to watch. And I think that's it for me. All right, real quickly to get my plugs in. Earlier this week, I took part in two podcasts. On Thursday, I was on the Long Road to Ruin, wrapping up the look at the Hannibal Lecter franchise, talking Red Dragon and Hannibal Rising. One okay movie and one that's so bad it should be studied. So you can listen to both parts of those in the archives here on the Radulichan Broadcasting Network. Friday evening, a one-night return of Everyone Loves a Bad Guy, talking about the villains from the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror series. I had a lot of fun talking about that with Benjamin J. Colon. Always good to talk with him. Had a lot of fun. And this coming Tuesday, Mark Radulich and I will be reviewing Inferno, which has flopped pretty hard domestically. So tune in to hear Mark explain how it's not that bad and me explain why, no, this is everything wrong with the world. It's kind of how our shows go. He defends something that I find terrible. I explain why it's terrible. And then we yell at critics. It's a lot of fun. Tune into that show. And next week, I will be back here. We'll be reviewing Fight Night 98 and previewing UFC 205. That's a big one, folks. UFC 205 is a massive event. It's a massive event. Three title fights, Weidman and Romero, the rest of them, the rest of the main card, I don't care. I don't care about Kelvin Gastelum and Donald Cerrone. I don't care about Miesha Tate and Raquel Pennington. Frankie Edgar's fighting Jeremy Stevens on the prelims. That's a heck of a fight. Rashad Evans is fighting Tim Kennedy. Khabib Nurmagomedov is fighting Michael Johnson. On Fight Pass, Jim Miller and Thiago Alves. That has some serious potential. That has some serious potential. So we'll be previewing that card. That'll be interesting. That'll be a lot of fun to talk about. I've got some tape to study for a few different fights that are coming up for that one. So I hope you'll all come back. Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on the Radulichan Broadcasting Network. I'll be back then. Jeff will be back. I hope you'll rejoin us. Until then, thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you for sharing the show with your friends. You can follow the show generally on Facebook, the Radulichan Broadcasting Network. Just like the page. It's the best way to get updates. Oh, and because I never plug myself, basically, if you want to follow me on Twitter, and you might not, but if you feel so inclined, I am at Winfree MMA. That's W-I-N-F-R-E-E MMA. My last name is a compound word. All right, I will see you all next week. Thank you very much again for being here, for sharing us, for your continued patronage. Stop by Saturday evening in the MMA zone of 411mania.com for my coverage of UFC Fight Night 98. Until next week, I'm Robert Winfrey. Thank you, everyone, for being here. And please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.